Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin's our guest, and it's Ask Me Anything, and all the lines full currently. As the show goes, they'll open up. You can call 888-318-7884. We'd love it if you'd call if you've got a question for Jimmy Akin. Jimmy, of course, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers. Back we go right to the phones, if that's all right with you, Jimmy.
Yeah, sure.
All right, we're going to go to Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. Lisa in Halifax.
Oh, as opposed to the other Nova Scotias.
Yes. How many Nova Scotias? How many Halifaxes are there? I don't even know that. Halifax is a lovely city. Lisa, we're Americans. You're okay talking with us right now? I know there's a lot of difficulty between us.
This is my third or fourth time calling.
Oh, it is. Okay. All right. I just want to make sure. I don't want to add to the stress
Lisa
between
Halifax.
Good. She should be desensitized to Americans then.
Yes, right.
Oh, I love my American friends.
Oh, neighbors. Well, we love our Canadian neighbors, Lisa. Thank you very much.
We love our Canadian friends, too. We just hope the aliens eat them first.
Oh, yeah. If they were.
You'll be next. We're neighbors.
All right, Lisa, go ahead.
Jimmy, 3 years ago, my 92-year-old beloved aunt, I really love this woman, passed away.
Oh.
And less than 10 days after she passed away, she came to me in a dream. It was Sunday, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And she was in a horrific, dark despair, screaming to the top of her lungs. I was so scared because I was feeling everything she was feeling. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is that I am still not at peace, and it's been 3 years. And she was very devout. She was Catholic, and but she was also very much devout in doing things her way and hurting people along the way. And she did have some mortal sins in her 92 years of life, but she might have asked for forgiveness. I don't know. So I don't know why I had this dream, but I'm a devout Catholic, and I think she knew I would head to church the next day and pray for her, and I did that. I went to the 12 o'clock mass on Monday. And I'm just wondering, why did I have that, and why can't I get rid of this thought that she's in hell because she was being tortured where she was?
Okay. Have you ever had a replication of this dream, or was it a one-time event?
One-time event.
Okay. Let me see if I can formulate my thoughts and put them all together, because I got several thoughts. The first one is, it is very hard to judge the nature of an experience if it's a one-off experience that happens only one time. If someone described to me this situation, it seems to me there are two basic possibilities here. The first one is that you had what's known as an after-death communication, or ADC. The second is that this was a purely natural dream that was generated by your own subconscious, based perhaps on your concerns and fears about your aunt or other people. And it had the occasion of her death, but it was just your own subconscious that produced it. Now, ADCs, so we're going to look at both of those possibilities. ADCs are very common. They are reported by approximately 40% of the population at least once in their life. So receiving an after-death communication from your aunt, I would interpret it not as she's in hell, but she's in purgatory. And that's why you were given the after-death communication, so that you could do what was within your power to do, by going to Mass and praying for her and things like that. And you did that. And you didn't have any later replication of the dream. So on its face, I would say that if this was an after-death communication, then you did good. You prayed for your aunt, and she hasn't come back requesting more prayers, so that would be a positive sign. You know, you may have also had Mass said for her, or other people may have had Mass said for her. It unless someone is continuing to have dreams about her being in torment, I would say, you know, this was probably, if it was an after-death communication, it was probably a something that got taken care of. It was just a purgatorial dream, and that's been taken care of, and you don't really need to worry about it at this point because it hadn't been replicated. On the other hand, it's also possible that this could be just a natural dream that was part of, was produced by your subconscious. You already had concerns about your aunt. You said she may have had mortal sins in her life that you don't know if she had asked forgiveness for. You also indicated she was very strong-willed. I forget the exact term you used, but you indicated she was strong-willed. And so though, and you could be concerned in general about what is the afterlife going to be like? Am I or others going to have a good experience of it? And when she died, it could just be that your subconscious added up those concerns and generated this dream, even though it doesn't tell us anything about where your aunt is in the afterlife. So I think that's also a real possibility here. And in terms of, you said it's been 3 years and you haven't been able to shake it, I would, you know, the concern that this raised in you, I would say that that is whether or not this was an after-death communication or whether it was purely natural, I would tend to chalk that ongoing concern up to natural causes. It sounds to me like this is just, once you became aware of this dream, regardless of whether it was natural or after-death communication, you became concerned about your aunt in the afterlife in a special way. And it was, you know, the thought of your aunt being in hell or, you know, that's a disturbing thought. But people who are in hell tend not to show up in after-death communications. They tend to show up if they show up and they indicate there's a problem, they tend to be in purgatory. The damned don't seem to get after-death communications. It's not, according to Thomas Aquinas, impossible for a damned soul to manifest, but it's rare. And so I would interpret it the way you did, as I need to go pray for my aunt because my aunt is in purgatory. In any event, since there has been no ongoing replication of this one way or the other, it seems to me that it's that your own psychology is likely, and the concerns that you have both consciously and subconsciously about the state of your aunt is what's responsible for the ongoing feeling of unease that you have with this dream 3 years later. But I would say it's either a purely natural dream, in which case you don't need to worry about it, or if it was an after-death communication, well, you did what you were supposed to do. You went, you prayed for your aunt, and you haven't had any more requests for help, and so again, I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay,
I'd
Lisa?
Be at peace, in other words.
Yes. You've done a lot with answering this question for me that I haven't gotten from others I asked, and I'm going to feel at peace now. I'm feeling that I can't sleep. It's been 3 years of me thinking about it constantly, thinking I didn't do enough, but now I feel like the way you answered that question that I need to kind of let it go and be okay that she's going to get out of purgatory eventually, hopefully.
Oh, everyone gets out of purgatory eventually. There's no question about that.
But she was tortured in that dream.
She said she was
being tortured in that dream.
Well, that's something that also should be taken with some nuance. God doesn't literally torture people in the afterlife. And so we sometimes have symbols that are used in scripture or in Catholic devotional literature that could that are suggestive of torture, but really what that means is just that they're undergoing the needed purification. It's not literal torture. So I wouldn't think of it in those terms. And if it continues to cause problems for you, like inability to sleep, I would consider, you know, maybe getting some counseling and, you know, to either from a priest or from another counselor, someone who would respect your religious views, who could help you find additional peace about this, because it's not something that should be weighing on you in that way.
God bless you, Lisa. Thank you so much. Kind of two birds with one stone. Got a really good conversation and improved relations between Canada and the United States on that one. So we'll take a quick break. Getting a lot of work done today. We'll be right back with more Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
This is Jim Pinto, director of EWTN Media Missionaries. EWTN Media Missionaries prayerfully take EWTN to parishes and the community through the print and electronic media we provide. You can help EWTN share the good news by becoming a media missionary. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today and join us in sharing the eternal word with the world.
Back to Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin's our guest. It's Ask Me Anything this hour, and we just cannot stop going back to Nebraska. Lots of calls from Nebraska today. Eric in Brainerd, Nebraska, listening, of course, on Spirit Catholic Radio. Glad you're here, Eric. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hey, good afternoon, Jimmy. I've got a question for you concerning divination. So, you know, there's different forms of divination. Could be tarot cards, psychics. What about the form of water witching, where you use what they call two divining rods? You hold them in your hands, you walk, and when you get over water, the rods are supposed to move. Is that part of divination in that same sense?
So the answer is no. And also, you mentioned psychics and things that are also not necessarily divination. I'll start by defining what divination is. Divination is the attempt to gain information about the future through inappropriate means. And so unless someone's trying to get information about the future, and unless they're using an inappropriate means, then they are not performing divination. Now, you mentioned a range of practices there, and I won't have time to comment on them all, but I will comment on two. You mentioned psychics, and you mentioned so-called water witching, also, which is sometimes said to be to use divining rods. With regard to psychics, there is a strand in Catholic tradition that holds that some people have what today would be called psychic abilities, including the ability of precognition. And this is something that's been held by doctors of the Church, like St. Gregory the Great and St. Thomas Aquinas. In his dialogues, St. Gregory the Great, who was, you know, one of the two popes known as the Great, and who also is a doctor of the Church, he held that some people have a subtle mental ability to pick up information about the future. This commonly, but not exclusively, manifests when they're dying and they may get information about the future in a deathbed vision, but it also could manifest in other situations. St. Thomas Aquinas, the biggest theologian of all time, who's also a doctor of the church, he also held that humans have a natural ability to pick up information about the future, and this can manifest, Aquinas would say, particularly in dreams. It doesn't have to manifest in a dream, but it can manifest in a dream. And that's actually consistent with modern parapsychological findings. For example, in the 20th century, the parapsychologist Louisa Rhine did a study of spontaneous ESP experiences and determined that 60% of precognitive experiences occurred in the form of a realistic dream. So that corresponds with what Aquinas said based on the reports he got of people having precognitive dreams about the future. Aquinas referred to this as a natural ability, just like St. Gregory the Great did, but he understood it as a natural ability that's different than the prophecy that God gives. And so Aquinas referred to divine revelation that comes from God as supernatural prophecy, whereas this human precognitive ability he referred to as natural prophecy, because it wasn't the same as divine prophecy. So if Gregory the Great and Aquinas are right, that humans have such an ability, then it would not be illegitimate to use it. And so if you had a precognitive dream, that would not be divination. In fact, when Aquinas discusses natural prophecy, he's distinguishing it from divination. Now, having said that about psychic abilities in general, let's look at the case of what you referred to as water witching. This ability goes by several different names. In English, it's commonly called dowsing. It has been called water witching, but that's actually not a good name, and it's fallen out of use because there's no actual witchcraft involved. This is just a reported psychic ability. It's also called radiesthesia, which is a name that's more commonly used in Europe. But here in America, it's more commonly called dowsing. And the fact that that when people use rods to do it, they're called divining rods, is an accident of the English language. You don't want to look at what does English call things as if that is a sure guide to what's going on, because the language is a folk process. And so if people on their farms back when they were looking to have a well dug, if they called it water witching or if they called it a divining rod, that's a folk process. That's not any kind of a guide to what's really going on here. It would appear that if this ability exists, then it's what's otherwise known as clairvoyance, which is not the same thing as precognition. Precognition is getting information through time, like about the future. Clairvoyance is getting information from another place that's either distant or hidden. Because what you're doing in doing dowsing is like looking for hidden stuff, like where's the aquifer that's under the ground that I can dig into and dig a well. Or you might be looking for something else. You might be looking for gold that's buried under the ground, or you might be looking for oil or any number of things that are not accessible to the human senses. Well, it so happens that the church has a rather extensive history with dowsing that most people don't know about. I actually did a two-part look at dowsing on Mysterious World, and I'll get you the episode number so you can listen to them. It's episode 246 and 247. And especially in episode 247, I talk about what the Catholic Church has said about dowsing. So you can go to mysterious.fm/246 and mysterious.fm/247 for more information. But to put it briefly, many Catholic priests and bishops have been dowsers. And in the 1940s, the then Holy Office, now it's called the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, it actually issued a ruling about can priests participate in dowsing. And the reply, the ruling that they end up releasing, and this is all pre-Vatican II, this is this is in the 1940s, they said that they didn't want priests doing certain types of Daozin consultations. Like, they didn't want priests using it for medical diagnosis, because priests were not even supposed to be doctors at that time, because, you know, people could get alienated from the church if, oh, this priest tried to cure my relative and they ended up dying and now I'm mad at the church. And they didn't want priests alienating people from the church. So they said, we don't want priests doing certain types of dowsing. But they explicitly said, we don't have a problem if they're dowsing for purposes of scientific experiments. So if a priest wants to be a dowser as part of a scientific experiment, that's perfectly permitted. And there have not been any subsequent rulings that overturned this. So that's still the case today. And there were no restrictions on the kind of dowsing that lay people could do. The decree only concerned priests, and it didn't put any limits on what lay people could do. Also, and I talk more about this in episodes 246 and 247, but, the Vatican itself has used dowsers for archaeological work. And Pope Pius X gave his apostolic blessing to a society of dowsers. And so this is not something that the Catholic Church regards as an illicit form of divination. Number one, it doesn't involve the future, so it's not divination for that reason alone. And number two, the Church has expressed an open attitude towards this and even allows priests to douse in some situations.
All right. Thank you very much, Eric. Appreciate the call and the question. Check out those Mysterious World episodes. I'm going to go to Rocky Point, New York, where Tony is watching on YouTube. Tony, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks, Jimmy. That the explanation of the other question was great. So my question is about the Eucharist. So I'm learning more about Marian dogma, and it's really easy to be like, to explain to someone, think about it. Mary is the mother of God. She was chosen by the Father, the people who don't believe, in the holiness of Mary, let's say. That's really easy to wrap your head around. How would you introduce the truth of the Eucharist to a lay person who objects it in that kind of way?
Well, I'd need to understand more about what the what perspective the person is coming from. But fundamentally, what I would do at some point in the discussion is say, well, look, Jesus said that the consecrated elements are his body and blood, and you've either got to take that as a symbolic statement, in meaning they're a symbol of his body and blood, or you've got to take it as a literal statement that they are his body and blood. Well, do we have other passages in the New Testament that shed any light on this? And the answer is that we do. In John chapter 6 and in 1 Corinthians chapters 10 and 11, the subject comes up. And in John chapter 6, Jesus is given the opportunity to clarify what he meant on this subject, and he refuses to back down. He says, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life in you. In Greek, he uses more dramatic language the longer the conversation goes on, so he's like up in the stakes. And he loses some disciples who had been traveling with him, and he turns to the 12 and says, y'all want to leave too? And they're kind of, Peter speaks for him and says, well, we've come to believe you have the words of eternal life, so where would we go? It's kind of a, well, we're committed to you, and we don't know what else we do, so we're going to stick with you. But notice, Jesus is willing to lose even the 12 over this teaching, rather than clarify it and say, come on, guys, I was being symbolic. He's like, do you want to go away too? That's basically drawing a line in the sand and saying, if you won't accept this teaching, get out of here. And so that's a pretty strong indication he wasn't just being symbolic here. He also, on other occasions, when he did use symbolic language and they misunderstood, he clarified it for them. Like when he warned them against the bread of the Pharisees and they thought he meant literal bread, and he explained, come on, guys, I was talking about hypocrisy. Similarly, in 1 Corinthians, St. Paul says that the bread we eat is a participation in the body of Christ, and the cup we drink is a participation in the blood of Christ. So he doesn't say they're symbols of the bread that they're symbols of his body and blood. He says we participate in his body and blood on that through these consecrated elements. Similarly, Christians from the first century forward have been believers in the real presence. If you would like more information about that, just go to Catholic.com, type in Church Fathers Eucharist or Church Fathers Real Presence, and we've got some quotations that will come up for you that you can also look at.
Tony, thank you very much. You have brought us to the break, and we have to take a very quick break, and then we'll be back. Lots more questions. All the lines are full. Jimmy Akin is our guest. Try to beat that. Give us a call. As lines open up, we'll get you on 888-318-7884. When Jimmy's here, ask me anything means ask me anything. And so whatever your question and whatever background you're coming from, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Matt Swaim here. Monday on the Sunrise Morning Show, it'll be our St. Patrick's Day special as we dig into the life and legacy of the great patron saint of Ireland. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
There's the groovy music for you. Jimmy Akin's here, Friday afternoon. We're just happy you're here with us. Thanks very much for taking the time to be with us. We've got full lines, so back to the phones we will go. It's Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin, and up next, Eric is in St. Louis, Missouri. Eric, thank you very much for the call. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. So I've heard Jimmy speak in the past. I guess it might have been the Mysterious World, discussing the Ascension of Isaiah, mm-hmm. Book of Jubilees.
I've mentioned him on Catholic Answers Live, too, but sure.
Okay. So the Lesser Yahweh, and I was looking, trying to figure out a little bit more about it, and my internet search seemed to state that it was more related to Kabbalah and the third book of Enoch and Metatron and some being named Yahweel. Can you explain that a little bit further for me?
Sure. So the idea of this is in scholarship, this is called the two powers in heaven doctrine. And the basic idea is that there is one divine figure in heaven known as Yahweh. But then there's this second divine figure in heaven who's very similar, but yet somehow distinct from Yahweh. And this second divine figure is known as the Lesser Yahweh. This is based, textually at least, it's based on various statements in the Hebrew scriptures where you have a figure like the angel of Yahweh, who is sometimes identified as if he just is Yahweh, but other times is identified as a distinct individual. You know, he's the angel of Yahweh. And so he kind of seems to be, he is God, but he's also somehow distinct from God. And so this was a view that was found in Second Temple era Judaism. And it eventually, after the time of Christianity, was marginalized in the Jewish community, and various rabbis opposed it, but that didn't completely wipe it out. Now, Kabbalah is a school of Jewish mysticism that didn't emerge until the Middle Ages. So it is not early. Kabbalists will claim that it's early, but the scholarly consensus is, nah, we've really got pretty good evidence this arose in the Middle Ages. But there are some works of Jewish literature that mention the second Yahweh that are after the time of Christianity. And they do, on occasion, identify the Lesser Yahweh as a figure named Yahoel, which is that name refers to an angel whose name means Yahweh is God. That's what Yahoel means. Yahoh is from Yahweh, and El is the word for God. So Yahoel means Yahweh is God. The other angel, Metatron, is very commonly referred to in some of this literature, at least in certain books. We're actually not sure what the name Metatron means. It may be derived from Hebrew, it may be derived from Greek, we're not sure. But Metatron is understood as a high-ranking angel who is sometimes understood as the angel of the presence, or the angel who guards God's throne, or things like that. And so, and sometimes Yahoel is identified as Metatron. You'll find some references to Metatron in the Talmud, but he is mentioned more prominently, which is sort of mainstream Judaism. But he is also mentioned in even more prominently in various Kabbalistic texts. When it comes to Yahoel, he's mentioned in the Apocalypse of Abraham, which is a pseudepigraphal work that dates from after the time of Christ. Both Yahoel and Metatron and the patriarch Enoch are all identified in different works of Jewish literature as the Lesser Yahweh. And what that shows us is that there was no generalized consensus in mainstream Judaism about who the Lesser Yahweh was. There are texts in the Hebrew scriptures that suggested the idea of the Lesser Yahweh, but then exactly who it was, whether it was Yahoel or Metatron or the Angel of the Presence or Enoch or Jesus, was a matter of speculation that people had different opinions on.
All right. That makes sense to you?
Yep.
All right, Tony. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the call and the question. Excuse me. That was Eric. I apologize, Eric. Ricardo is in Fredericksburg, Virginia, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Glad you're here, Ricardo. Go ahead with your question.
Hello, Jimmy. Thank you for taking my call. And before I begin, I'd like to ask if there would be any podcast or book that you would recommend in my to my particular situation. So basically, my son joined what many call these days hyper charismatic, I would say, cults. And they're like an offshoot of the original Pentecostals, and they, you know, they come up with strange things, you know, every day. Anyway, and he's been pretty damaged by that, but he's still there. Two things that I wanted to touch on very quickly. He criticizes, for example, the Catholic Church because, as far as he says, there is no office of prophet. There's no prophecy in the Catholic Church. That's one thing. The other one is, of course, you know, they divide body, soul, and spirit, like the soul and the spirit are separate. So he claims that even if we or a soul ends up in hell, that the spirit always goes back to the Father, because they misquote the Bible, where it says that he, referring to Jesus, that came from the Father, will return to the Father. So they believe that even before we were conceived in the mother's womb, that we were in heaven for a long time before that. And so all that, and then, of course, you have the deliverance calls that, you know, they say that Christians don't get possessed, they only get demonized because the soul gets compartmentalized. So I'll leave it at that, because that's so much, but
that is a lot,
so much help in being effective referring to these things with my son. Anyway.
Okay. So first thing, what's the name of the organization that your son has joined? Do you happen to know?
It's not Assemblies of God. It's beyond that. It's like every church comes up with their own thing. Some of them call themselves apostles. He used to go to one that he doesn't go anymore.
No. Ricardo, what is the name of the group he is presently a member of? Do you happen to know?
It's the name of the churches, the name of the church itself. They don't have a group. They call themselves sometimes non-denominational, but they're, you know, they're charismatic. They don't, you know, sometimes they don't even want to call themselves non-denominational.
All right, hang on.
Okay. So I'll do what I can to help. The first thing is, you refer to them as a cult, and that's a term I avoid because it doesn't have an objective meaning other than bad religious group. And if you use that term with people, they will get defensive and they will view you as being hostile to them in their positions, and that will make it harder to win them over. So I would recommend that you don't use that term, especially in conversations with your son. If you tell him you're in a cult, that's just going to make him defensive and he's going to stop listening to you. You also describe this group as hyper-charismatic, and I think that's another term that is likely not to be helpful. That also does not have an established meaning. It sounds like he's a member of a charismatic church. Now, he is a member of a charismatic group that has problematic ideas, and you named several of them there. Let's kind of take them in reverse order, and you'll probably need to help me with the first one. But you mentioned that they think Christians are not technically possessed, but they're demonized. I probably wouldn't fight him over that. That it seems to me that they may be drawing some distinction between being possessed and being affected by a demon or demonized. But I assume they accept the passages in the New Testament that talk about this phenomenon. And I don't really care what they want to call it. St. Paul says we don't need to fight about words, and that only ruins the hearers. So rather than getting into contentious discussions about should we call this possession or should we call it demonization, I really wouldn't fight that battle with them if that's all there is to it. You then mentioned that they have this separation of between the spirit and the soul that says, and that's a position known as trichotomy. Trichotomy means three divisions. And the idea is that there are three divisions or parts of man, the soul, the spirit, and the body. Most Christians, including Catholics, don't believe in trichotomy, but dichotomy, which means two divisions. We have a body on the one hand, and then we have a soul or spirit on the other hand. Now, again, this is a fairly technical distinction that normally doesn't result in a substantial difference of views. Many Christians who are trichotomists will say, oh, well, the spirit is the aspect of our immaterial side that can relate to God, and the soul is the aspect of our immaterial part that is not directly oriented towards relating to God. And, you know, you don't need to fight people over that too much if they're just using the names soul and spirit to refer to different aspects of our immaterial nature. But it sounds like this group is going further and saying that everybody's spirit goes to heaven when they die, but not everybody's soul goes to heaven when they die. And that splits man apart into different categories in a way that I would be inclined to argue with them about, but I'd have to see what verses they're using to support this view. It's not something I can, the idea that the soul always goes to heaven and the spirit always goes to heaven and the soul doesn't. I'd have to know more about their literature in order to be able to interact with that view. You also mentioned another view that they have. It was the first one you mentioned. What was that?
That there is no office of prophet in the Catholic Church, and there is no prophecy in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, that's just clearly false. Catholics have had private revelations or private prophecies, if you want to call them that, all the way down through history. You know, they didn't stop at the time of the New Testament. They've continued all the way down through history. And today there is a prominent Catholic charismatic movement that has prophecy as part of its activities. So that's just clearly false. And you can point to private revelations that saints have had down through the centuries. You can point to current Catholic charismatic activity. The idea that this doesn't exist in the Catholic Church is just mistaken.
All right, Ricardo, we got to leave it there because we're a little late for the break. We'll take a break, right back with more Ask Me Anything with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one, Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Mike Aquilino with a few words about the guardian angels. Jesus assured us that we all have guardian angels, and we see their work throughout the Bible in both the Old and New Testaments. They guard and guide prophets, apostles, the Holy Family, and even entire churches and nations.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin, our guest. Lots and lots of calls still, and just one segment left, so back to the phones we go. Let's go to Mia in Cincinnati, Ohio, listening on the Alexa. Mia, go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hi, everyone. Blessings, Jimmy. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, this is my testimony is very, very long. I just started listening to you guys, and I just need some help, and I'm not too sure where to go. And if I get emotional, I do apologize. I've been experiencing my daughter and I paranormal activity. No, it sounds crazy, but it's true. For
3 years,
I have had a paranormal team come into my home and film and everything like that. It just made things worse. This thing's probably listening right now. I have video proof of a picture of this thing, but it's causing so much trouble. I've gotten car accidents. My daughter has been sick. We wake up with scratches. We wake up with bruises, horrible nightmares. So I have tried everything. We got baptized about 3 years ago. I've moved, and I've had pastors here. I go to church every Sunday. I'm a non-denominational Christian. I went to all-girl Catholic school, and I grew up going to Catholic church, but I was never baptized Catholic. But I've just been going the Christian route, and like I said, I've had pastors here probably every other weekend for 2 or 3 months, blessing us, doing deliverance. You know, I'm praying, I'm doing everything, and I don't know what else to do. So I'm looking for, like, I guess, going to the Catholic faith to see if a priest can help me. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Is that what you would like Jimmy to answer, if a Catholic priest could help you?
Yes.
Okay.
My mom called the archdiocese for me, and they sent me a letter back and told me to say these certain prayers in each room for so many days, which I did. The activity has been so bad this week. I've seen it. It's just causing... it's a demon. When this first started happening, the things I saw, I thought maybe it was my dad, because my dad passed away, 3 years ago, and I thought maybe he was communicating, but then I found out that, you know, as the Bible says, that when we pass away, we either go to heaven or hell. God doesn't have our bodies or our souls roaming the earth like that.
That's actually not true. The Bible does not say that.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do.
Let me say a few things that I hope will be of help. The first one is the Bible actually does not give us, it does not say things that would preclude the idea of after-death communications. And as I mentioned to a previous caller today, after-death communications are extraordinarily common. They're reported by about 40% of the population at least once in their life. So I would not rule out the idea that that you may have had some after-death communication from your father after his passing. On the other hand, when after-death communications occur, they don't tend to be destructive. And you mentioned waking up with scratches and things like that. Now, I happen to be a trained paranormal investigator. And so, you know, I would be happy. I'm going to say this part because if I don't get to say anything else, I want to make sure you have my contact information so that you could contact me. But you could email me at Jimmy, J-I-M-M-Y, at Catholic.com. And I could go through some of this material with you in more depth than I'm able to here on the air. I would say a few things about doing an investigation. You don't want to just assume something is a demon, even if it seems frightening or harmful, because there are other possibilities. There are natural things, you know, just because you wake up with scratches, it doesn't mean that something paranormal put them there. It could be something natural happened. You know, there could have been a scratchy object in the bed, or someone could have scratched themselves while they were asleep. There are also poltergeist phenomena, which appear to, in most cases, be caused by a live-in person, not by a spirit of some kind. Then there are also demons. That's also possible. What one wants to do in a competent paranormal investigation is learn about the phenomena and then make a list of all the possible explanations for the reported phenomena, and then work through the possible explanations. You don't want to assume it's one thing or another. You don't want to assume that it's natural. You don't want to assume that it's a demon. You don't want to assume that it's a living person. You don't want to assume that it's a departed person. You want to look, you want to work through the possible explanations and see where the evidence leads. Also, frequently in paranormal situations, it's not just one cause. It's a mix of causes, some of them natural, some of them paranormal. So I wouldn't be dismissive of any of the possibilities you've named. I also wouldn't immediately leap to any of the possibilities you've named. I would want to take an open-minded look. You mentioned having a paranormal group come in and film, and that can be okay, but a lot of paranormal groups that are interested in making videos are actually not competent investigators. They're not taking a scientific approach. They may use technology, you know, but they actually, a lot of them, I mean, I know a lot of them commit malpractice, frankly. They'll go into people's houses, they'll wave e-meters around, you know, EMF meters, they'll take videos, and then they'll say, "You've got a demon," and leave, which doesn't help anybody. That just scares them. Similarly, you mentioned a priest helping, and priests can help. There are even priests who are exorcists, but most priests are not trained paranormal investigators, and there are some exorcists who have the mistaken idea that everything is a demon, and that if they just come in and assume that as an explanation, then that's as bad as the incompetent Ghostbusters who come in and tell you, "Oh, you've got a demon." The one nice thing about an exorcist, though, is he actually is able to do an exorcism. Now, it sounds like in your conversation with the Archdiocese, they already gave you some deliverance prayers to do, and you can certainly take it up a notch from there and have a priest come over, and just an ordinary priest, and do a blessing, and if need be, they could put you in touch with an exorcist who could look into the case further. But I would also suggest that you, I would suggest, frankly, that you contact me off the air and let me learn more about your situation and help you out if I at all can, because I'm one of the few people working in this area who has knowledge both of paranormal things in general and of the religious explanations. And I take a very scientific approach and look at all the possibilities rather than assuming one or the other is, it must be the case. So if you're open to that, I would love to hear more about the situation and see what service I could be to you. Like I said, the way to contact me is Jimmy, J-I-M-M-Y, at Catholic.com. And I would be happy to give you the benefit of my expertise in taking a full-orbed look at the different possibilities that could be playing a role here.
Mia, I will leave it there. I hope you will get in touch with Jimmy using that email address. I'm going to see if I can get Mary on real quick before we have to go in Detroit, Michigan. Mary, can you ask your question quickly to give Jimmy a chance to answer it?
Yes, okay. Thank you. I have a son that's 44, and he's lived with his girlfriend for 7 years. They're going to get married. They live in New York City, and they're going to be married by a friend, which I know he's had for a long time, that sent away for a certificate.
Okay, so Mary, the question is?
Is this going to be a valid marriage, and should I go?
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mary.
Is your son or his spouse someone who has been baptized or received into the Catholic Church?
They both have been baptized. My Catholic. Son received Holy Communion, but not...
I'm not worried about Holy Communion. Your son and his prospective spouse, you say, have both been baptized. Have they been baptized Catholic?
Yes.
Okay.
In that case, they're citizens of the Catholic Church, and they need to follow the marriage laws of the Catholic Church. the same way they need to follow the marriage laws of the state of New York, which they're also citizens of. That means they need to either be married by a priest or get a dispensation from being married by a priest. Someone who's been ordained on the internet is not going to be able to marry people who are Catholic validly. And if the marriage is not going to be valid, I could not recommend attending.
Mary, I know that was very quick. I hope that I know you also waited, so I wanted to make sure I got you on. Call back if you have follow-up questions. We'd be happy to take them on another day. Jimmy Akin, thank you very much for those two hours. That'll do it for us. We'll see you again next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.